Tonight we're going to continue our series on worldliness, and we're going to be talking about a very popular activity that a lot of people engage in today, and that's gambling. We're going to be examining the scriptures tonight, and we're going to see what the Bible has to say about gambling. Well, I guess that would be a real short sermon, wouldn't it, if we were talking about specifically dealing with gambling, because the Bible does not use the word. I want to acknowledge that up front, but nevertheless, it does deal with a principle. And we're going to be looking at nine reasons tonight why gambling is wrong. Nine reasons. And these are some things that have been presented here before, but I would like to present the material again. It's been, in fact, I think it was 2002 when I presented this material before. And I would like to get the material on the website and also get the audio out there so people will be able to listen to these things and make their decision. Because we are living in a society where this particular activity, like I said, is very prevalent. We just passed, this past November, the lottery here in the state of Arkansas. So please consider these things tonight. And let's examine what the Bible has to say, and then we'll be able, I think, to make a wise decision on whether it is something we as Christians should engage in or not. What is gambling? To play a game for money or property, Merriam-Webster. American Heritage Dictionary says to bet on an uncertain outcome as a contest, to play a game of chance for stakes, to take a risk in the hope of gaining an advantage or benefit. World Book Encyclopedia defines it this way: gamblers usually bet money or something else of value as a stake on the outcome they predict. When the outcome is settled, the winner collects the loser's stakes. There are three elements of gambling. And in order for an activity to be considered gambling and fall under the heading of what we're talking about tonight, all three of these things must be present. You take out one of these things and you're not talking about the same thing that we're dealing with tonight. Number one, the uncertain event, something that is arbitrarily determined. It is determined by the luck of the draw or the spin of the wheel. It is determined by chance. Secondly, the stake. There's something that must be placed on the table to lose. I place something, it's a wager or bet that is deliberately chanced. I put it up and risk that being taken away from me. But I'm putting it up so that I may win from someone else. A winner and loser. One loses a possession wagered while the winner takes it from him. And people ask me quite often about, well, what about investing in the stock market? Well, that's not gambling because in order to win in the stock market, the company that you invest with also has to win. The winning, the gain, the interest that you receive from that, or the finances that you receive from that, are the product of a good company intake of finances. So it's not determined on a loser losing money so that you may gain. So we need to think about those things. We'll talk a little bit more about that in a minute. This is something that is not determined by amount or degree. There's a principle involved here, and we need to think seriously about the principle. The amount of money or the value of the thing risked does not alter the biblical principles involved that we're going to be discussing tonight. And for one to consistently object to another's gambling, I think in order to be the proper influence and the proper example, he has to totally abstain from anything that would fall under this category of gambling. So it's not determined by amount or degree. Here is a quote from Gamblers Anonymous webpage. It says, "Gambling for the compulsive gambler is defined as follows. Any betting or wagering for self or others, whether for money or not, no matter how slight or insignificant, where the outcome is uncertain or depends upon chance or skill, constitutes gambling." So the thing that I want to get from that is, no matter how slight or insignificant. So Gamblers Anonymous recognizes that there's really no difference as far as the principle goes in the amount or degree. If it's a small amount, it's still gambling and it's still wrong and it's still something that gamblers, those who have problems gambling, should not do at all. And I wouldn't want to encourage Christians not to engage at all. There are various forms of gambling very prevalent today. Casino gambling, such as slot machines, roulette wheels, dice, card games, numbers games, etc. These things that are played for stakes. And we see these casinos popping up all over the place these days. Betting on horses or dogs. We have Oaklawn here. And we also have the Greyhound Park over in West Memphis. That's gambling. Lotteries. As we just passed so that we could amend our Constitution to allow lotteries here in the state of Arkansas. And currently the legislature is in the process of finalizing that. We have a lottery commissioner now, and he's in the process of putting everything together. Bingo, raffles, charity or church sponsored, it doesn't matter what organization is doing it. These things are still falling under the heading of gambling, bingo and raffles. Now, playing bingo for fun, not for money, that'd be one thing. But bingo and raffles, they certainly would classify as gambling. Bazaar and fair booths, where you pay to try to win a prize. Most of those things are rigged anyway. Amateur gambling, including poker games for money, betting on the outcome of athletic events, office pools, matching quarters for Cokes or coffee, playing marbles for keeps, etc., etc., etc. So these are the kinds of things that we're talking about, but I want to make it very clear what we're not talking about. We're not talking about casting of lots that we read about in the Bible. They cast lots to make a decision. We read that in Acts chapter 2. They cast lots, and the lot fell upon Matthias. Casting of lots was used simply to make a decision. I suppose that there were instances where people would cast lots so that they wagered money. If they were wagering money, certainly it would be wrong. But that's not what the apostles did. That's not anything that we read about in the New Testament that was approved of as far as gambling. But they did cast lots to make a decision. Taking a risk to cross a street, for example, that's a risky thing these days. Crossing a street. Or the farmer planting. You know, he's taking a risk when he goes out and he plows up the ground, he plants his seed. We could have a bad spring. We could have too much rain or not enough rain, and he loses. But that's not what we're talking about. It's not merely taking a risk. The other two things also have to be involved, where you put up a stake and you're also gaining by the loss of someone else. Or buying and selling stock, as I mentioned, an investment. It's not gambling. You're winning depends on other people winning. You prosper as they prosper. You don't prosper because they lose. You prosper because they win. And buying insurance, an honest business transaction. You're protecting yourself and your family from disaster, from calamity, from automobile wrecks. So buying insurance is not gambling. Prizes. If it doesn't cost you anything to register for a prize, that's not gambling. That's not gambling. So when you register to win a prize that is given away for advertisement, etc., that's not gambling. Competition for a prize, not a wagered possession, but won by skill in fair competition. Whether it be basketball, baseball, or football, you know, the football season, they go through the entire season, and whoever wins the national championship gets the big trophy. Well, that's not gambling. They're playing a game, and they get a prize for winning the game. So that's not what we're talking about. But let's talk specifically about the subject of gambling. Gambling on a roll. Total estimated sums wagered by Americans, legally and illegally. In 1962, $2 billion estimated spent on gambling. By 76, it was $18 billion. In 85, $80 billion. By 93, $400 billion. $400 billion. And by 2000, $866 billion. What could we do as a country with $866 billion? $866 billion. Do you know that $500 billion a year in the United States is legally gambled? $500 billion a year. According to the 2006 Gross Annual Wage Report, Americans lost nearly $91 billion gambling. That's lost. The National Gambling Impact Study Commission noted that Americans spend more on gambling than on recorded music, theme parks, video games, spectator sports, and movie tickets combined. You could take the NFL, NBA, Major League Baseball, and you could take Hollywood, and you could then take the music industry and lump all of that together. And we think those folks in Hollywood make a lot of money. And we think that those football players and basketball players make a lot of money. But friend, these casinos are getting a lot of money off the backs of people who are supporting them. So, that's an interesting statistic. Americans lost $32.4 billion gambling in commercial casinos alone. That's just in the casinos. And 11 states house about 460 separate commercialized casinos. The casinos' combined gross revenue in 2006 was $34.1 billion. 48 states have some form of legalized gambling, with Hawaii and Utah the only two states in the Union that currently do not have legalized gambling. Lotteries are the most played form of legalized gambling in the United States. In 1997, Americans wagered $35.8 billion on lotteries. That's $135 for every man, woman, and child in the nation. That's a lot of money just on the lottery. In 1963, lotteries were banned in every state. But now, 43 states and D.C. have lotteries. There are seven states that currently do not have lotteries: Alabama, Alaska, Hawaii, Mississippi, Nevada, Utah, and Wyoming. Now, Mississippi, for example, doesn't have lottery, but they do have casino gambling on the river. On November 4th, 2008, voters approved a measure that allows the state lottery in Arkansas. It will become the 43rd state, and is the 43rd state, to sell lottery tickets since New Hampshire started the first modern lottery in 1964. So, it's a problem in the United States of America. But it's not a new problem. You can go back to the Greeks in Homer's time. They gamble. Gambling board was discovered 18 or 1900 years B.C. In Crete. And Tertullian said, this is an interesting quote, this goes back to the post-biblical days, "If you say that you are a Christian when you are a dice player, you say what you are not, because you are a partner with the world." That's how Tertullian viewed playing dice, gambling. If you do this, he says, you are not a Christian, but you are a part of the world. Pathological gambling is one of the fastest growing mental health problems in the Western world. New England Journal of Medicine, that goes back to 2000. And I'm sure it hasn't gotten any better in the last 9 years. Let's look at nine reasons now why gambling, according to the Bible, is something that Christians should abstain from. Number one, gambling is caused by greed and covetousness. We had read a little earlier from 1 Timothy chapter 6 that we are to be content with what we have. In fact, going back to that context, godliness with contentment is great gain, for we brought nothing into this world, and it is certain we can carry nothing out. And having food and clothing, with these we shall be content. But those who desire to be rich, there's the problem. That's greed, covetousness. Those who desire to be rich fall into temptations and a snare, and into many foolish and harmful lusts, which drown men in destruction and perdition. For the love of money is a root of all kinds of evil, for which some have strayed from the faith in their greediness and pierced themselves through with many sorrows. My friend, many families have pierced themselves through with many sorrows by gambling. They have destroyed their families. They have destroyed their own life. They have destroyed people that are around them. They've stolen from them. They have created crime in neighborhoods. The motor for gambling is something that leads to many sins. In 1 Corinthians 6, verses 9 and 10, covetousness is listed there as one of the sins that will keep you out of heaven. So this is serious business. That which is the cause of gambling is a sin. Greed is eager desire for base gain. And covetousness is translated from two Greek words. One means a greedy desire to have more. The second, literally meaning loving money. So you're wanting to have more money because that's what you love. Covetousness. If winnings were removed, I wonder what casinos would do. If they would just stop paying out to a few people some winnings, I wonder how many people would go. You know, they've got to keep the winning high enough to pay out to keep people coming. Because if people stopped winning, what would happen? People would quit going. Now, they've got it figured out to where people will win. In fact, some of the numbers that I gave a little earlier, $500 billion gambled. Then you turn around, $91 billion lost. Okay, that means that for about every $5 you spend gambling, you lose one. And that's the average. Every $5 you gamble, you lose one. Now, on average, if everybody did that, I mean, you just go and you gamble, well, you're going to lose a dollar every $5 that you spend. Well, there are some people who get a greater return. And the reality is, most people, they lose a lot more than a dollar. They lose a lot more than a dollar. They lose, in fact, they go with $500 and they come home in debt $10,000. That's the way it works most of the time. But I wonder what would happen if they removed the winning. And people just, you know, people say, well, I play for fun. Well, let's just stop paying the winnings out and let's see how many people go and gamble for fun. How much fun would that be? Secondly, it violates the principle of stewardship. Christians are to be wise and responsible with what God has blessed them with. If we invest what we've been blessed with, we need to be careful how we invest it. Good stewards will be blessed according to Luke 12, 42 and 43. We know that we must glorify God with what we've been blessed with. We are stewards, 1 Peter 4, 10 and 11. We are to use what God has given us to glorify Him. Gambling doesn't glorify God, by the way. And what we do as stewards, we must be faithful. We must be faithful to God. We must use what we have to further His cause instead of trying to get rich and throwing our money away in slot machines. For one to win at gambling, others must lose. Number three, it violates the golden rule. In order for me to win at gambling, I have to take it from somebody else that's lost money. That's the way it works. Gambling is predicated on the losses, pain, and suffering of others. Gambling preys on the desperation of the poor. And there's another tragic thing about this. The majority of people who gamble make less than $20,000 a year. That's including the lottery. And in fact, that's where most of the poor people spend their money. They go and they buy lottery tickets. And so it's preying upon the poor and their desperation to get out of their poverty. They're looking for a get-rich-quick scheme. And they think gambling is it. A Christian is not to take advantage of another. In Proverbs chapter 14 and verse 31, let's look at some of these passages listed on the screen. In Proverbs chapter 14, verse 31, the wise man says, "He who oppresses the poor reproaches his maker, but he who honors him has mercy on the needy." I've always said, if a cause is worth giving to, if it's worth supporting, then let's support it. We don't have to come up with some gimmick to prey upon people's greed and their covetousness to get money for these things that are necessary. If it's a worthy cause, then people will support it. We should not oppress the poor. In Proverbs chapter 22, verse 16. Proverbs 22, verse 16. "He who oppresses the poor to increase his riches, and he who gives to the rich will surely come to poverty." In Philippians chapter 2 and verse 4, skip over to the New Testament, Philippians chapter 2 and verse 4, "Let each of you look out not only for his own interest, but also for the interest of others." That's the attitude that we as Christians should have. We should not be wanting to take from somebody else so that we can pad our own pockets. We should be wanting to help people if they're in need instead of taking away from them. In Matthew chapter 7 and verse 12, the golden rule: "Whatsoever you would have others to do, or whatsoever you would have others to do to you, do also unto them." We need to follow this rule. Also, number four, gambling violates the means of honest gain. The Bible lists four things that we are to do in order to make money. Gambling is an attempt to obtain this money without providing something of equal value. We're wanting to wager a little bit of our money so that we'll win a lot from somebody else. But there are four means of scriptural gain. Number one, Proverbs 13 and verse 11, by hard work. You know, people think of work as being a curse on humanity. That's not the case. You know, Adam and Eve were placed in the garden. Before sin entered the picture, they were placed in the garden to do what? To tend and to keep it. Work is not a bad thing. Work is good for us. In Proverbs chapter 13 and verse 11, the Scripture says, "Wealth gained by dishonesty will be diminished, but he who gathers by labor will increase." And in Ephesians chapter 4 and verse 28, we know that we are to work so that we can help those who are in need. Let us work so we can give to those who are poor. Fair exchange. In Matthew chapter 25 and verse 14, by investment, you have the three individuals listed there. Two of them invested what the Lord gave them, and one went and buried his in the sand. He did not use the investment, the money that the Lord gave him wisely. But the truth is, there's nothing wrong with investing to make money. Nothing wrong with that. That's not gambling, of course. And we see that in the New Testament being done by gift. Acts 20 and verse 35, it is more blessed to give than to receive. There's nothing wrong in receiving. And there's certainly nothing wrong in giving, but it is more blessed to give than to receive. And of course, gamblers, they're not looking to give, they're looking to get. So it violates the means of honest gain. We have four means by which we can gain money: work, exchange, investment, and giving. And that's it. Gambling is consensual theft. Now I know that the person that you take it from, he lays it down willingly too. You all put the money on the table, and you risk your money being lost just like they risk their money being lost. And I know that there is a consensual concept there. But you know what? Adultery is consensual too. Fornication is consensual. There are many sins that are consensual. That doesn't make it right. That doesn't mean that I can take from somebody else just because they're dumb enough to put it on the table. It doesn't make it right. So it violates the means of honest gain. It is actually stealing. It can result in intemperance. Now, I understand this in and of itself doesn't make it wrong. But I think we should recognize that gambling can lead and has led many people to intemperance. It has led to addiction. In fact, studies have been done that actually demonstrate that a change takes place in a person's mind, in his chemical imbalances in his brain, after he becomes addicted to gambling. He needs it, just like he would need a drug or alcohol. It can become addictive to an individual. The existence of Gamblers Anonymous implies that very point. Gambling can be addictive. And we are to stay away from anything that is addictive. Anything that will take us over, we should stay away from it. If we have a problem with something, then we should stay away from it. And many passages speak on the need for temperance. We need to practice self-control. And you know, you can apply this to drinking. One drink may not mean that you are an alcoholic. But my friend, how do you know that one drink will not lead you to become an alcoholic? Let me ask something else. Have you ever known anyone to become an alcoholic that's never taken a first drink? No. So, you want to avoid the last. The proverb writer talks about how at last it stings like an adder. If you want to avoid the last, avoid the first. Same thing is true with gambling. Gamblers Anonymous has grown rapidly. Think about this. The number of Gamblers Anonymous chapters has grown rapidly. In 1960, there were 16 chapters in the United States. This number grew to 130 in 1970. So in 10 years, they went from 16 to 130. And by 1988, 600 chapters existed. And I couldn't find how many chapters exist today. Perhaps there are too many to count. But nevertheless, you can see the growth and the need for this. Every website that I went to investigating this, they would always have a big thing that said, if you have a gambling problem, click here. Or if you have a gambling problem, call here. And maybe you've seen on advertisements on billboards advertising the casinos in Memphis or Mississippi. You know what? They would all say, they'd all have a thing at the bottom that says, if you have a problem with gambling, call this number. I wonder why that is. It's because it's a serious problem. They recognize it. They put it in their advertisements and on their billboards. It can result in intemperance. Gambling Anonymous estimates lists approximately 2.5 million people as pathological gamblers. Another 3 million as problem gamblers, and another 15 million people as a risk to become problem or pathological gamblers. A lot of pathological gamblers out there. And most casinos make their money on these pathological gamblers. And these people lose everything that they have before it's all said and done. We'll touch on that a little bit more in just a minute. Next, it sets a bad example. We can destroy our reputation. Proverbs 22 and verse 1. What is more important than a good reputation? It's very important that we keep our name pure. That we set the right example for other people. But having a runt reputation, it can destroy your influence for a long, long time. And you know, you can live a life of setting a good example. You can continue a life that is influencing others for the good. But then one act, one thing can destroy your influence for years to come. And once a reputation is destroyed, it's very hard to get it back. So it can destroy one's reputation. It could lead others to sin. Your gambling could influence somebody else to say, well, if he's doing it, then why can't I do it? In Matthew chapter 18 and verse 6, the Lord talks about those who would cause offense to another. And it is a serious business. Matthew 18 and verse 6, but whoever causes one of these little ones who believe in me to sin, it would be better for him if a millstone were hung around his neck and he were drowned in the depth of the sea. Woe to the world because of offenses, for offenses must come, but woe to that man by whom the offense comes. We need to be concerned about that. Romans chapter 14 and verse 13. There the Apostle Paul dealing with liberties. There are some things that are a liberty, things we can engage in, and it not be sin in and of itself. But if it's a questionable thing, if it's something that would lead someone else to violate their conscience, the Apostle Paul says, don't do it. Therefore, let us not judge one another anymore, but rather resolve this, not to put a stumbling block or a cause to fall in our brother's way. Now, maybe you think, you know, I can control myself, and I'm just going to gamble a little bit, and I'll be okay. But then you influence somebody else, and how do you know that he does not become a pathological gambler and destroys his life? All because you have led him into that by your influence. In 1 Corinthians 8 and verse 13, Paul said he wouldn't eat meat if it caused another to stumble. So we need to think seriously about our influence and what we could be tempting someone else to do. It sets a bad example. In Matthew chapter 5, verses 13 and 14, we're told there that we are the salt of the earth. And we are the light of the world. How do we let our light shine? Can we let our light shine by going in casinos and letting people see us and say, well, he's supposed to be a Christian. Most everybody knows that those who profess to be Christians, they are usually, generally, against gambling. But you profess to be a Christian and you go gambling. In Philippians chapter 2 and verse 15, talks about how we are in a crooked and perverse world. Let your light shine, Paul says. in the midst of a crooked and perverse generation. So, it sets a bad example. We need to be people who are leading others down the right way. We need to be people of positive influence, leading them to things that are holy and beneficial for society. Gambling is not beneficial for society, by the way. Another reason why gambling is wrong is because it breeds other sins. You know, Jesus said in Matthew 7 and verse 20, "You shall know them by their fruits." In Galatians chapter 5, verses 19 through 21, turn over there with me real quick. Galatians chapter 5, verses 19 through 21. Here the Apostle Paul lists some of the works of the flesh. He says, "Now the works of the flesh are evident, clearly seen, which are adultery, fornication, uncleanness, lewdness, idolatry, sorcery, hatred, contentions, jealousies, outbursts of wrath, selfish ambitions, dissensions, heresies, envy, murders, drunkenness, revelries, and the like." And such like, the King James Version says. Anything that's resembling these things, that's a work of the flesh. Now, what kind of sins are associated with gambling? In Las Vegas, what kind of sins are so prevalent in that society and associated with gambling casinos? Go back over the list and think about it. Adultery, what about that? Adultery? Fornication? Dennis Caro, he's gone to Las Vegas the last 2 years. He said when he got there, he is praying to the Lord that he wouldn't come while he was in Las Vegas. Now, he didn't go to gamble. He went for a business trip with a furniture company that he's associated with. But he said that there are prostitutes on every corner. It's legal in Las Vegas to be a prostitute. And drunkenness is everywhere. People would come in at 3, 4, 5 o'clock in the morning. When he's getting up and he's down in the lobby and getting his coffee and starting his work, on his sermon or whatever he's doing, people are coming into the lobby to go to bed, drunk. And he's seen fights and everything else there in the lobby of the motels. He said it is a disgusting city. He said you just feel dirty. He said doesn't matter what you think about and how pure you try to keep yourself while you're there, you just feel dirty when you leave. And I wonder why that is. You think about some things associated with gambling. Family problems, child abuse, spousal abuse, divorce, suicide. The general population, 1.1% of the population will commit suicide. But those who are members of Gamblers Anonymous, 13% of them commit suicide. General crime, organized crime, very high in gambling cities where casinos are located. Crime goes up. Several reasons for that. One is that it draws people who are covetous to begin with. They're greedy. They're wanting money. And they'll take it any way they can. And they steal so that they can have money to gamble with. They do that to support their habit of gambling. And organized crime. I mean, these are the people that are running the casinos generally. They're involved with it themselves. You have organized crime in these places. So the crime rate is clearly going to go up. It is associated with this kind of environment, with crime. Check forgery, prostitution, tax evasion, embezzlement, illegal drugs, drunkenness, robberies, and credit card forgery. And the list could go on and on and on and on and on with things that are very common in cities that have casinos. It breeds other sins. What kind of lifestyle is associated with gambling? Something else. It destroys families. Just mentioned that. But here's a quote from Ronald A. Reno entitled, "Gambling's Impact on Families." It says, "The tragedy of gambling addiction reaches far beyond the more than 15 million Americans who are problem or pathological gamblers. Employers, work associates, friends, and taxpayers often pay a steep price as well. However, it is family members who bear the brunt of the pain and misery that accompanies this addiction. In addition to material deprivations, family members frequently experience the trauma of divorce, child abuse and neglect, and domestic violence." When Mississippi first opened up their gambling casinos on the Gulf, Calls to the Gulf Coast Women's Center crisis line doubled within the first 3 years of the casinos to an average of 800 a month. In Biloxi, Mississippi, the number of domestic violence incidents reported to authorities rose from 167 in 1992 to 715 in 1996. In 4 years, it went from 167 to 715, a 328% increase. 650 additional divorces were granted in Harrison County the year after casinos arrived. 650 additional divorces. 1 year later, longtime Gulf Coast Chancery Court Judge William L. Stewart said gambling is now a factor in at least one-third of the divorce cases he oversees. One spouse or the other is taking money and gambling it away. In fact, I saw a news report just this past week of a lady who was gambling and lost everything. I mean, cleaned out the bank account. The husband never had an idea that she was gambling. Never knew it. She got on the internet and she had blown every penny that they had and went into great debt. Certainly it causes family problems when that happens. The National Gambling Impact Study Commission reported children of compulsive gamblers are often prone to suffer abuse as well as neglect as a result of parental problem or pathological gambling. In Indiana, 72 children were found abandoned on casino premises during a 14-month period. They're so wrapped up, they've got their minds so set on gambling, getting inside and having a good time, that they leave their children in the car. Destroys families. Harms children. In Louisiana and South Carolina, children died after being locked in hot cars for hours while their caretakers gambled. An Illinois mother was sentenced to prison for suffocating her infant daughter in order to collect insurance money so that she could gamble. Many problems associated with this particular sin. Something else. It is association with evil companions. Gambling establishments are host to other corrupting vices, including prostitution and drunkenness. Christians certainly are to avoid such places. In 1 Thessalonians chapter 5, verses 21 and 22, we're to abstain from all appearances of evil. Abstain from all appearances of evil. In 1 Corinthians 15, 33 and 34, evil communication corrupts good morals. We need to watch who we associate with. When a person goes to a casino, for example, and they gamble, and they lose their money, who are they supporting? Well, they're supporting people who are filthy rich, who are criminals, for the most part. They are people who are prospering off the backs of poor people and their losses. It supports an immoral, predatory, and exploitative industry. Instead of partaking in such things, we ought to expose them, Ephesians 5, 7, and 11. So, it puts us in association with evil companions. So, what about the lottery? You have the uncertain event. It is determined arbitrarily. Now, I think in Arkansas there are a couple of things that are being considered as far as how the game is going to be played here. But whatever they determine, it's going to be arbitrarily determined. The luck of the draw, the luck of the roll of the dice, or the luck of the number that pops up into the machine. The stake. There is a wager or bet that is deliberately chanced. When you go in and you spend $1 or $2 or $5 on lottery tickets, that is money that you're putting up. And a winner and a loser. One loses a possession wagered while the winner takes it from him. Now, there are a lot of losers in the lottery game and very few winners. But in order for the winners to be winners, in order for them to get any money, guess what? A lot of other people have to lose their money. That's the way it works. And then you have the idea that, okay, we're going to take all this money that we get and we're going to give it to education. You know, like I said earlier, if something is worth supporting, let's give to it. Let's support it. People are not against supporting that which is good for society. Now, I think, since government has been involved in schools for so long, the reason why the population does not want their taxes raised is because the government wastes so much of it. And so little of it actually gets down to the student. But if communities could actually support their own school districts and support, I think that things would work a lot better. And people ought to be willing to support a good work. But even at that, the point is, Paul said, should we do evil that good may come? Even if the money is going to a good cause, does that mean that we're to do evil that good may come? Should we pray on the poor? And should we destroy society in order to have something that's good? Of course not. Should we do evil that good may come? You know, they talk about all the money that's going to be going to education. And, in fact, our lieutenant governor, really, in his campaign, and as he was campaigning for the lottery, he made the point that we're going to make sure that all the money goes to education. Well, just this week, June 18th, there was an article by the Associated Press picked up by the Arkansas Democrat Gazette. It says, new Arkansas lottery director Ernie Pasolet has the third highest pay package among the nation's 44 state lottery directors. The Arkansas Democrat Gazette surveyed the compensation of state lottery directors and found that only Georgia and Tennessee pay their lottery administrators more than Pasolet's $324,000 per year. That's pretty good. That's a pretty good paycheck for a year, isn't it? How'd you like to make $324,000 a year? Now, I wonder where that $324,000 a year is going to come from. Where do you think it comes from? And not only that, incoming Arkansas lottery director wants to hire two vice presidents and pay them $200,000 a year each. So you add another $400,000 to that $324,000. The incoming director of Arkansas's lottery says he wants to hire two vice presidents to help run the games and pay each of them at least $200,000 annually. Ernie Pasolet told members of the lottery commission Friday that he'd like to create a vice president of games and vice president of administration. We're going to pay them over $200,000 a year. Now, where are they getting that money from? And then how much money is it going to cost to provide the machines and provide the game material? How much money is it going to cost them to operate all of this and to pay other employees to do all this? Well, where's all that money going to come from? You really think that all the money is going to go to education? Well, of course not. Of course, even if it did all go to education, I would be against it because why don't we just give to it? Why don't we just support it like we ought to instead of stealing it from the poor, taking it from them? Even though it's consensual, the state is actually taking from people who don't have the money to spend. They're taking money that they should be using for milk for their children, for their babies, food for their families, and paying their bills. Instead of paying their bills, they're going to be spending their money on lottery tickets, and they don't have the money to spare. I was, well, this last week in Evening Shade, I talked about the gospel of greed. I presented that lesson up there. Talked about how these evangelists on TV, you know, they always ask for money and say, if you give us $50, the Lord's going to bless you 100 times, 100-fold. And there are all kinds of people out there, elderly people, who are sending their money in to these folks. And I said, it infuriates me that these tele-evangelists are preying on the poor. And it should infuriate all of us to think about it. But that's exactly what the state of Arkansas is going to be doing. They're going to be preying on the poor in order to support education. Now, I'm not against education. I think it needs to be supported. And, of course, most of it, I think, is going to go for scholarships. But there are already so many grants out there. If you just look, if you work hard, there are all kinds of grants available. I know my son just went to University of the Ozarks. All kinds of grants, all kinds of opportunities out there if you'll just get out and look for them. The National Gaming Commissioner, Richard C. Leon. This was 2001, but the principle is still the same. He says, in my view, state lotteries have paved the way for great increases in legalized gambling. They have promoted the notion of beating the odds. They have been able to advertise while others have not. And they have propagated the myth that gambling is good for society in general. And that is a myth, by the way. They have propagated the myth that gambling is good for society in general and the government in particular. Lotteries are perhaps the hardest form of gambling to justify in terms of their cost and benefits. The best studies all point in the same direction. Lotteries prey on the poor and the undereducated. And that's just the truth. That's the fact. Well, what about raffle tickets? What about raffle tickets? Again, you have all three elements, but we're just usually talking about $1 or $2. You know, and it's for usually a good cause, for a baseball team or for some team to take a trip somewhere and play in a tournament, something like that. But again, I say if it's something worth supporting, let's support it. And parents should be the ones doing most of the supporting of their children's games. But nevertheless, I've got this question. Are we training our children that gambling is a legitimate means of raising money by selling raffle tickets to raise money for social events and organizations? What are we teaching our children by this? What are we teaching them? Are we not preparing them to be members of Gamblers Anonymous one of these days? There's a danger there. Even if it's just a couple of dollars. We used to sell raffle tickets at Western Little League until I became president. I put an end to that practice. And we started just charging families enough money to provide all that we need to provide to take care of the budget. And it worked. It worked great. We had the actual parents of the children supporting the league. And those who didn't have the money or couldn't raise the money, they were giving candy to sell. They could go sell candy and then bring the money in, and that made up the rest of it. And we had more than enough money. When we did have raffle tickets before I became president, we would all get a stack of raffle tickets to go and sell. And I would just throw mine in the trash and write a check out and take care of it. Because I'm paying my part for my children to play ball. And when people come up to me trying to sell me a raffle, I'll just give them $1 or $2 or $5 and say, look, I don't want the ticket, just here's a donation. If something's worth supporting, let's support it. Well, let's not train our children to be gamblers. So, gambling is not harmless entertainment. It has destroyed millions of lives. Millions of families. It is a greed-driven, predatory vice scientifically designed to squeeze the maximum amount of money possible from every single patron. It is by its very nature an enterprise wholly dependent on victims. James C. Dobson, Ph.D., Focus on the Family, 1999. The spread of legalized gambling has exacted colossal social and economic cost on society. Gambling expansion brings with it increased crime, divorce, and family disruption, and it creates a multitude of new addicts. Gambling also exploits the poor and the youth. Legalized gambling is harmful public policy that should be vigorously opposed at all levels. And many people have opposed gambling who claim to be Christians, but the world that we live in has usually overridden their objections. In Titus chapter 2, verses 11 and 12, Paul writes, "For the grace of God that brings salvation has appeared to all men, teaching us that denying ungodliness and worldly lust, that we should live soberly, righteously, and godly in this present age." Now, if you were to classify gambling, would you classify gambling as ungodliness and worldly lust, or would you classify gambling as living soberly, righteously, and godly? Where would you classify it? You think about all that the Bible has to say about how Christians should live and the kinds of things that we ought to avoid. How would you classify gambling? Would it fit under the works of the flesh or fruit of the Spirit? Galatians 5, 19 through 23. Where would it fit? Worldliness. This is just one of the serious problems that we're facing today as Christians. And it has infiltrated our society. And certainly we as Christians need to be aware of the dangers of it. And we need to know what the Bible says about the kinds of things that are associated with it. And I think that as we study the Scriptures and we search and learn what kind of people we ought to be as Christians, I think that this is an activity that we can clearly understand is something we shouldn't be engaged in. We need to stay away from it. And we need to tell others to stay away from it. We need to oppose it every chance we get. We need to expose it for what it is and what it does. Maybe you're here tonight and you're subject to the Lord's invitation. If you know what you need to do, if you're not a Christian, then do it tonight. Don't wait. Obey the gospel of Jesus Christ. Become a child of His and follow Him and serve Him and be a good steward of the things that He blesses you with. Maybe you are a Christian and you're not living like you should. If there's any sin in your life tonight, won't you repent of it? Won't you confess it and have that sin taken away through the blood of Jesus Christ? If you're here and you're subject to the Lord's invitation, won't you come as we stand and sing?